Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, old sports, and welcome to another episode of the Hello, Old Sports podcast here on the Sports History Network. I'd like to thank you for joining us as always. And this is a very special treat for us today. We have with us author and journalist, former CNN editor-at-large, Chris Saliza, and he has written the book Power Players, Sports, Politics, and the American Presidency. And Mr. Saliza, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us here today.
Other than calling me Mr. Saliza, great opening. You can just call me Chris.
And before we start, I just should note that my wife will be angry with me if I don't mention right off the bat what a big fan she is as a daily or maybe somewhat semi, you know, 3 or 4 days a week listener to the Tony Kornheiser podcast. So
she's like to hear.
She's a big.
She's a loyal little.
Exactly. She's a loyal little. And I'm a less frequent listener, but I've been a fan of Tony Kornheiser going back to his sports reporter days in the mid 90s. So. Yeah.
People always ask me what he's like, and I'm like, exactly how you think he is.
Grouchy.
Yes, grouchy. Yeah, he's not playing a part. He's being himself.
So we really kind of jumped at the opportunity to do this cool interview because we started our podcast in late 2020, and every year on President's Day, I thought that this might be a good topic to sort of talk about presidents in sports. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of touched on various things, whether it was Trump with the USFL, whether it was Bush 41 as the captain of the Yale baseball team and meeting Babe Ruth, or Bush, almost becoming MLB commissioner. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the book and then also kind of what made you want to write it?
Well, I mean, you outlined in some ways why. There's just so many good stories around presidents and sports, and a bunch have been told in disparate places. You know, there's been books written. Don Van Atter wrote a great book about golf and the presidents. Mm-hmm. There's been a few more academic research books written about it, but there hasn't been sort of a popular, and by that I just mean like a, you know, for a general audience book that says, here's the presidents, here's the sports they played, loved, and watched. Here's what it tells us about them. So, to be honest, I was like a little bit surprised that the book was like not something that people had done before. Mm-hmm. One of the first things you do when you do this is you look around and say, has someone written a book that's really similar to this in the last 2 or 3 years? So it's just my attempt to, I've always cared about two things, sports and politics. And it was always, I was always trying to figure out a way to get those two things to talk to one another in a way that seems smart and thoughtful. It took me a long time to think of sort of how we could do that. But this book is that attempt, I think.
And for the listeners, I just want to note that while I did not note at the beginning, Andrew is in fact with us. He's just joining us. So, Andrew, thanks for joining.
Yes, I'm joining from my mobile office outside my job. So,
love it. It's the best place.
So, I think there's so many different places that we can take this, and there's so many kind of cool, whether they're anecdotes or bigger picture things that I want to get out from the book. But there's really kind of two categories, and that's maybe a little bit of an oversimplification, but you talk about these guys, and you started with Eisenhower and you're up through Biden. So by my quick math, I think that's 13. I could be wrong.
Good job by you. I think that's right, but I don't want to confirm it.
So sort of two questions, and this is a little bit from left field, but of the 13 presidents that you looked at, who would you consider sort of the best athlete? And then who would you think of as maybe the biggest fan? Just a fan of sports.
So I think without question, the best like pure athlete is Gerald Ford, which I don't think should surprise people who listen to your podcast, who pay attention to this stuff, right? Gerald Ford was on like a real Division One football team at the University of Michigan. He was a starting offensive lineman. He had contracts to play for the Lions and the Bears post his time in college. He ultimately didn't do that and went to law school, but like no one else has that pedigree, right? There's no other president that you can point to and say like, this is a person who had offers to play presidentially. Like it's not a thing. I would put, so Ford is clearly like number one overall. 1A, I would put George H.W. Bush. And I think that George H.W. Bush is good at a lot of things. Obviously, he is the captain of the Yale baseball team. He plays first base. He's not a great hitter. He's a pretty good fielder. He never has any aspirations, nor does he have any offers to play professionally. Although he did, this made me happy. So I remember, I'm 47, so I remember when All-Star Weekend in Major League Baseball used to be they would have an old timers game in addition to having the All-Star game. So, you know, you'd get like guys who were like 50, 60, maybe a 70-year-old or two out there and they'd play. Well, when Bush was vice president, I think it was 83, he played in the old timers game in Houston and actually got a hit and made like a very slick play in the field, which is a little odd given that he was not at that level of like a baseball player. He's not like, oh, if he had gone in another direction, he would have been Orlando Cepeda. You know what I mean? Like he's just not that good.
He's not what Ford was for football. In other words,
not even close. No, not even close. And like, what, you know, there are questions like, would Ford be a starting offensive lineman on the Michigan football team today? No. Right. I mean, no, he would not be, almost certainly. But he was at the time in his moment, he was an elite athlete. So I would say 1 and 1A are Ford and then Bush, clearly in that order, though. What was your other one? Because I had someone specific for it and I want to make sure I get it right. What was the other one that you wanted me to pick?
Who would you consider the biggest fan? Just, you know, just like the teams, you know, professional, college, whatever, but just going to the games, watching them, whatever.
Easy, Nixon.
He
was like a maniacal fan, particularly of baseball. Nixon is like, in some ways, he kind of reminds me of myself in some ways. Like he played sports growing up, but like he wasn't particularly gifted at them. You know, he loved them more than he was good at them. You know what I mean? So he plays football in high school. He even plays football in college. But like there's these great, maybe not great for Nixon, but there's these great anecdotes. Basically, like Nixon is essentially like a tackling dummy in college. Like he's just cannon fodder. He's just out there to get knocked over because they have to run plays against a practice squad and he's on the practice squad. But he is a literally a maniacal fan. So there's this one great anecdote. I think it's in 69. A reporter for the AP asks him like, who are the four best players ever? So, something like that. You know, some like very open-ended question. And Nixon gets like super into it. And with David Eisenhower, who yet is Dwight Eisenhower's grandson and also married to Nixon's daughter, with David Eisenhower, they like retreat to Camp David, and Nixon comes up with four teams, American League and National League, and he basically does like 1880 to 1930 as one bracket, and then 1932 at that point, the present, so, you know, 70 as another bracket. And he doesn't just do like a starting nine. He does like relief pitchers, left-handed relief pitcher specialists. Like it's the nerdiest list of all time. And like and like way more than the AP reporter asked for. Like the AP reporter was like, I'll ask Nixon like who his favorite baseball player is. That might be interesting. And Nixon goes like way, way overboard and goes into all this stuff because he is like a huge fan. If you listen to some of the Nixon tapes during Watergate, you can hear baseball in the background. Like he is a guy who is really, really into sports, not just baseball, but I think his mind, what you find is there's a lot of crossover. I'm sure you guys have found this. There's a big concentric circle between people who are nerdy about politics and people who are nerdy about baseball. Like, of all the sports that people who are nerdy about politics like, baseball is the one that they gravitate toward the most, even though it's like clearly like probably the third major sport in this country at this point. I guess you could debate it with basketball, but regardless, like there's a huge overlap, and Nixon is very much in that. So he's definitely, he and Pat, when they were dating, would go to football games, and Nixon would be like screaming and like frothing at the mouth. Like he is like a real, I think I say in the book, he's a fan bordering on fanatic, you know, in the traditional definition of it.
Yeah. I've heard a tape, one of his tapes that was released, where he's talking to his daughter in the Oval Office, and I think it's a Cowboy Redskin game late in the season, and he's rooting for Washington, but somebody's coming back, and he's like, he's all of a sudden in the middle of talking to his daughter, he's yelling, dig, god damn it. And so he really was a sports fan in a way that some of the others really weren't.
And he's also like a frustrated athlete too. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, unlike a Ford or a Bush or even the younger Bush, all of whom were, they're not, the two Bushes are not elite athletes, but they're quite good athletes. Like, George Bush is good at things he tries to do. Like, he's a good long distance runner. He can bike for a long time. He's a pretty good baseball player. Even I'd put Donald Trump. Donald Trump's a pretty good baseball player. He's a good golfer. That is not the story of Richard Nixon. Like, he is a guy who loves sports, but is not good at them. And I think channels all of his love for them into sort of this maniacal devotion to stats and numbers and history, which by the way, I totally can relate to, because like, I feel like I spent, you know, most of my 20s, like managing fantasy baseball teams, you know, like Nixon would be a great fantasy baseball manager if like that existed now, you know, if it existed back then, like he'd be good at that. He was really into all that stuff. And it was real. It was not like some of these guys, one of the things you find if you when I did the book, some of these guys, sports is just a put on. They know it's a common language that the public speaks. They know they have to be at least like semi-conversant in it. And so they are. Lyndon Johnson's a good example of that. Like, for Nixon, it's real. Like, Nixon genuinely cares in a way that most of them didn't.
Yeah. To me, the anecdote about the all-time teams, A, is the one I most identify with because, you know, we do totally a podcast on this. But it's also especially sort of interesting because the people in the orbit that are mentioned in your anecdote about that, it's a lot of the same names as the Watergate people. So like these people, the people you only usually hear about, Colson in, you know, all the President's Men. Yep. And here he's bringing him numbers on Walter Johnson. So it's a little bit,
too. It's a great point. It's fascinating that he's like, it's in the middle, like Watergate is, there's already like rumbles. I may have the dates wrong, because I believe there's already like rumbles of Watergate, and yet he's like totally like leaning on his inner circle to like dig up like what did Nap LaJoy hit in 1887? You know what I mean? Like, it's just so random. Mm-hmm.
And Nixon had a lot of other ways that he sort of involved himself in sports while he was the presidency, including sort of naming a national championship in 1960, or naming a national champion, I should say, between Texas and Arkansas, which is the famous game of the century. It's called one of the college football games of the century. And he sort of named, I think it was Texas who won the game, right?
Yes, Texas won. Yes.
And he named them champion, much to the chagrin of Joe Paterno in Penn State, who thought that they should have been in the conversation.
And you know what's so fascinating about that is, so Nixon goes there at least in part for political reasons, because like his political people believe that like the kind of people who go to those college football games are like Nixon people, whatever that meant. Like he was there at least for somewhat political reasons. He liked football, but he was not obsessive about football in the same way he was about baseball. Funny Richard Nixon thing, hated basketball. Not entirely clear why, but like even from a young age, he didn't like basketball. Anyway, there's such a fascinating piece of that story. So as you said, it's Texas versus Arkansas. Bill Clinton is a kid watching that game. And at halftime, Arkansas is ahead and they bring Nixon into the booth. And Nixon's like, well, I don't know. And he's like, I think Texas is going to pull it out. And Clinton to this day, like, remembers that and believes that Nixon jinxed Arkansas by picking Texas. I mean, it's again, like, the amount that people care about sports, even at even presidents, is remarkable. But yeah, Nixon, I mean, I said before that I think Nixon's fandom was genuine, and I think it was. At the same time, every president, Nixon included, understood and understands that it's very hard to get elected to something in this country, particularly president, which is like such a personal vote for people, if you have no idea who LeBron James is, just as an example. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be culturally conversant. Sports is a language that most people speak. A lot more people speak it than speak the language of politics. And so for a politician, you've got to at least kind of faint at that, you know, pretend maybe that you've got some interest in it. Most of them had a native interest. I think the two who are the least interested are Lyndon Johnson, who basically just cared about politics, honestly, even though he grew up in like the South during, you know, when football was a big deal, as it still is, and Ronald Reagan. You know, Reagan sort of, he had like a passing fancy with Notre Dame football because he had played George Gipp, who, by the way, is like a totally fictional character, but he had played George Gipp in a movie. And so he kind of identified with Notre Dame football and would occasionally watch it. But like, for the most part, he didn't really care. He'd much rather be on the back of a horse.
And that's sort of ironic, because other than Bush and I guess Trump, depending on how you want to look at it, Reagan was one of the few who had actually worked in sports as a radio announcer.
Absolutely.
For baseball in the 30s. So
it was his first job. Basically out of college, his first job is working doing Cubs games. And he's actually in Arizona at Cubs spring training when he gets a call from a Hollywood studio saying, will you come and do a screen test? And he leaves, does the screen test, and comes back. And then later, you know, they say, we'll pay you X amount of money, which is much more than he's making as a Cubs announcer. But yeah, I think somebody said this to me and I thought it was a great point. I can't remember who it is, unfortunately. They said the best way to understand Reagan is to think of him, you know, he was a lifeguard as a kid. When he's a teenager, he's a lifeguard. And he would keep stats on how many people he saved. So later in life, he would say he had saved 70 people on the Rock River between, you know, in 7 years or something like that. It's like, again, is that true?
Yeah.
It's very hard to check. But somebody said, like, him as a lifeguard is a great way to think about Reagan. Like, he's necessary but removed. Like, that was kind of who he was, right? He was part of these scenes, but always at a remove. He was not the guy sunning himself on the beach. He was the guy in the lifeguard chair watching out and jumping in the water if he needed to. And that's kind of how he is his whole life. Like, even Nancy Reagan, I quote her in the book, she says, like, he never really had any close friends. Like, he didn't identify in that way, which is such a contrast, by the way, to George Herbert Walker Bush, who's super competitive, who loves team sports, who's really into that sort of like that connection that you get from playing team sports. They're running mates, but obviously they you know, Reagan and Bush didn't have that great of a relationship. I think in some ways because they were so different in the way that they looked at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because sort of the public personas of both of them, which is something that Bush really tried to shed, was that Bush was the aloof one, sort of the stuffy New Englander, whereas Reagan was able to foster that image. If you ask people during Reagan's presidency, which one of them is the more passionate sports fan, Bush or Reagan, they all would have said Reagan, even though it wasn't the accurate facts.
I think one of the most fascinating things from the book is that, you know, in a lot of ways, Bush, and sports helps explain this, Bush is deeply misunderstood as a president. You know, like, you remember the cover, I think it was Newsweek, the wimp factor, you know, this idea that George Bush is kind of a wimp and not tough enough to be president. When in fact, like, again, this is a guy who is like a very serious athlete, very competitive. His mother is like a very competitive and good tennis player and sort of raises him on competition and the need to behave in a gentlemanly way, but that competitiveness is good. He's good at all sorts of different sports, right? He's good at horseshoes. He starts a horseshoe league when they're in the White House. And Reagan is like not at all interested in any of that stuff. He's like a very mediocre athlete. You know, there are differing reports. He plays some football in college, but like he's a very sort of like passing athlete. Nothing great. And I think that the whole sports thing, Bush was not good at tooting his own horn, at least in part because his mother had raised him to always sort of defer credit, talk about the we versus the me, through the lens of sports. And I think he's uncomfortable getting out there and being like, I did this, then I did that, then I did that. He's like the anti-Trump in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. He can't take credit for things he's actually done, which, by the way, I think is a reason that if you look at presidents whose ratings have sort of improved and images have improved since they left the White House, George H.W. Bush is almost always near the top of that.
One of the things that I thought of, and I literally I've not had time to think about this question all that much because I just thought of it, 5 minutes before we started this interview. It's interesting to me how many of these guys played football as their main sport. And I just kind of jotted down a quick list: Ike, Kennedy, Nixon, Reagan, Ford.
Yep.
I guess
yep.
In some ways, I mean, maybe there wasn't as much out there because there was really only baseball and maybe basketball for some of the laters. But do you think there's anything to that, or do you think it's just sort of an accident of history that all these guys, not all, but more seem to have played football than baseball or basketball or even, run track or anything like that?
I think two things. One, I think you're right. There was just less offered, right? So, and that was the sport that young men played much more so than basketball, even more so than baseball. Eisenhower played baseball and was actually pretty good, but overall you're right. I do think, though, that and this is especially true for Nixon, who did play football. I put that in air quotes. Like he was on the team. He never really like actually saw the field. He was on the team. Nixon like very much learns the lessons of sort of strategy, putting one sequencing, putting one thing after the next thing after the next thing after the next thing. He very much learns that from watching football. His coach, this guy named Chief Newman, Native American guy, Nixon very much identifies with him and his approach to life and the sort of like, it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how many times you get up. So I think there's a strategic element to football. It's very episodic that probably played a role. But I do think it is also worth noting that like once you get beyond Nixon and Ford, it starts to fade out. Not only do less people play in college, I mean, one of the things that I think is hilarious is, I've just described Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon as very mediocre athletes, both of whom played a college sport.
Yeah.
Like, Barack Obama did not play a college sport. Donald Trump played 1 year of squash at Fordham. Joe Biden did not play a college sport, though he wanted to play wide receiver at the University of Delaware, but didn't. Like, most of our modern presidents have not met that bar. Some of that's just like the bar for being an athlete, even at the low D1, D2, D3 level is much higher. But some of it, I think, is just a focus. Like back then, that was a focus. That is what you did. That is how you sort of got to know yourself and the world around you in a way that it's less true now.
Yeah, and then you look at somebody like Clinton, who really had no real team sport background.
Nope.
He was a fan, but didn't really have any sort of team sport background, even in the slightest. Whereas, 30, 40 years later, everybody, it seems like, did something athletic in their school days.
Absolutely. And I it's funny. I think of like high-end sport involvement, like military service. It used to be that like, you couldn't get elected to anything in this country if you hadn't served in a war. I mean, 70% of the House were veterans. And now it's, that number is, I don't know the number, but it's way, way lower. It feels like it's something that used to be a requirement that no longer is.
Yeah, that probably the football point may not be totally unrelated because, obviously a lot of the comparisons between football and war and
yep.
playing football as a young, preparing soldiers, I'm a West Point season ticket holder. That's still a connection is one they try to make. So I think it probably made you a more attractive candidate in previous generations too.
I think that's exactly right. And somebody made that point to me in the book, which is it was the intro of the book. I talk about, I don't go into great detail with this because it was a little bit before the time that I was focused on, but Franklin Roosevelt gathers like the big heads of, I think it's Yale and Princeton and one or two other schools at the time who were the powerhouses in football, gathers them because football has become so violent. People are dying on the field. Mm. And Roosevelt, to your exact point, Roosevelt directly links playing football to getting people ready to serve in combat. And he thinks that's really important for young American men to do. And that's why he gets these group together to try to, quote unquote, save football, which they sort of do by making it a little bit safer. But yes, I think that's absolutely a thing. One other like very interesting thing I didn't know anything about until I did the book. So obviously Eisenhower's, you know, gigantic military hero before he comes into office. He is also a bridge playing addict. He loved bridge. And there's all these, once you talk about going down a rabbit hole on the internet, try the bridge rabbit hole. You can really go deep. So there's, I didn't know this before. There's all these articles. What you were saying made me think of it. There's all these articles about how bridge is being compared to the strategy of, is closer to the strategy of war than any other game out there. And that drew Eisenhower to it for that reason. It's like you have to make decisions that, like, how much do you let your friends know based on your opinion, what you do, how much information let your friends know? Do you deceive to try to deceive the enemy? Like, there's just a lot of, there's a great piece who, and now, of course, I can't remember who wrote it, but there's a great piece that ran the Washington Post in like 1990 that basically talks about bridge and its comparisons to war strategy and why so many high-end military and political leaders were really, really into bridge, which I thought was, again, I mostly tried to stay focused on the purview of like sports, but like, you know, sports and entertainment and games, I got a little into that with Eisenhower.
You know, and it's funny that you mentioned that because this is actually, it might be a future episode that Andrew and I do, and it's something we've talked about in the beginning. When Sports Illustrated was first published, I think in 54 was the first year of Sports Illustrated. If you look at the covers of Sports Illustrated for like the first, let's say, 2 or 3 years, there's, I mean, and there's the usual, you know, Casey Stengel, Mickey Mantle, Willie,
right, Arnold Palmer,
Palmer. Yeah. But then there's also squash, a lot of hunting. There's a there's a front page about gourmets, you know, cooking. And there's one about
Cool.
And there's one
I would love to listen to that episode.
Well, we'll let your we'll let you guys know when we get that up.
That's right. Here's a super weird fact. We haven't talked that much. We talked a little bit about Nixon, but you know, one thing that Nixon does a lot of is bowl, which is like so prototypical Nixon. Like he had lanes installed in the White House at like 10 o'clock at night by his own admission. He goes into the lanes and just rolls like 7 or 10 games, like by himself. But anyway, fun factoid, did you know the first athlete sponsored by a company in America is a bowler? It was like in the late 60s.
Was that in the book?
Yes.
Okay, because I was going to say, I feel like I heard that very recently.
I mean, it's just crazy to me. Like, it, you know, that's the thing. Like, we think of Nixon bowling, and you're like, oh, what a weirdo. Like, he's into this, like, very, you know, minor sport. He's, like, really into it. He, like, tries to brag about it. He's actually pretty good. He tries to brag about how good he is. But, like, at the time, like, bowling was a really big deal. Mm-hmm. The first athlete to make more than $1 million is a bowler. It's there's some weird bowling stuff in there too. Again, that's why I love doing the book, to be totally honest. Like, there's so much fun stuff that I didn't know anything about that, like, I kind of, you can go down these rabbit holes and find interesting stuff.
And you brought it into so many different places, you know, whether it was, you know, bridge with Eisenhower, or you talk about Jimmy Carter and his fishing, and I think his Jimmy Carter's first published, it's not like today when everybody's on Twitter, whether they're a former president or whoever, but Jimmy Carter's sort of first communication with the world, his first public writing was in a fly fishing magazine in 1982.
Totally. After he loses, the first thing that he wrote, to your point, is like this stoop. I mean, I read it. It's super. I didn't understand any of it because I don't know anything about fly fishing. It's this really nerdy examination of like 3 days of fly fishing about like what lures he used and like all this slang in it. And you're like, what the? And one of the things that Carter was the most upset about on leaving the White House was that his like prized rods got lost. I mean, it's just totally fascinating about like what he prioritized. I mean, again, like that's the thing is, like, somebody asked me today or yesterday, like, what's it like now that the book is out? And, you know, it's for me, like, it was so fun to do. I care what people think. I hope people like it. I don't want to be like, I could care less. I obviously care. I hope they
like it and hope they buy it, right?
Right. I hope it sells. At the same time, like, it was really fun to do. And I think I finished the writing in Labor Day 2022. I finished writing it. So this whole time has been editing. And then, like, you know, the book publishing process takes forever. It's like the last readout of, like, slow America. Like, there's everything takes longer than you think. But I had forgotten a lot of the stuff that I really loved about the book, you know, because I'm not like going back and reading through the book every day. But I went back and read through it, and it's just I really enjoyed doing it. Like, it was fun. It was not. It never really felt onerous. Which is not to say there weren't days where I was like, God, this is. I have to write more today. Of course, at times. That's what my wife always says. The reason that they pay you to work is, you know, they pay you to work. It's because it's not just something you would do for free. but overall, it was just like a really cool, for someone who cares about sports and politics a lot. It was like just a really cool opportunity, more than anything.
I guess we should probably talk at least a little about golf, seeing as how shorthand for every president really since Eisenhower is what a president do, they golf. Yep. And that's obviously created, you know, I remember kind of distinctly in the Obama years, people on the other side criticizing how much golf he was playing. But then even people, I think it was Bill Maher or something one time saying, like, I didn't vote for this guy as a golfer. I voted for him as a basketball player. And like, they come with, you know, not being seen playing too much or being out of touch, but, you know, using it as, so it's, you know, can you talk a little about the different, you know, whose relationship with golf was the most interesting?
So it's the through line through all of them, to your point. It's the thing that a lot of them played football. A fair number of them ran, but the thing that all of them did at least a little bit, right? And like LBJ again is a little bit of an outlier because he didn't do anything other than politics, but he occasionally golfed. Is they golf? I think the natural question there is why. And from everyone that I talked to, I got a very similar answer, which is being president is a really nice prison. Which is like, you can't go anywhere, do anything. You can't go for a run outside. You can't go for a walk outside. You can't go to dinner. You can't there's very little you can do that feels quote unquote normal. Like, and I think that's increasingly true in the last 25, 30 years. And that on the golf course, yes, there are still Secret Service. It's not like the Secret Service like just lets you, you know, go golf for 6 hours. There's Secret Service there. But they're on the fringes of the fairways or they're in the trees. And you can feel like you're outside and you have some level of normalcy happening that you don't get anywhere else. So I think that's what draws them all. I think it's why you see them do it, even though sometimes it is not great optics. Like, one fascinating thing, I didn't know this, but I learned in the course of doing the book, the best natural golfer of from Eisenhower on is JFK. Like, he's like a really good natural golfer. He has back problems, obviously, at limits. But like, I actually talked to a guy at Golf Magazine who broke down all of their swings, because they're like, you can find their swings available on like on YouTube. There's some video of all of them swinging, and he broke down their swings. And he said, like, JFK's swing is, like, by far the most natural and easy. You can tell he has a back problem, but it's, like, the best. But JFK was very reluctant to ever be seen playing golf or talk about golf because he already was, like, his dad was an ambassador and a really wealthy guy. His, you know, he came from a family of, like, achievers. He was widely seen as his dad having bought his place in the House and the Senate. So he didn't really talk about it. But he was the best. The one who had the most interesting relationship with it, I think, is I'll give you an old and a new. So the old is Eisenhower, in that I think for all the criticism of, you point out, Trump and Obama playing golf, like, Eisenhower played 10 times as much golf as either of them. I mean, Eisenhower played all the time. I mean, he was constantly playing. He was going on like 3 month vacations from like August to October where he would just play golf 36 holes a day.
They don't let you do that anymore.
No, that's not a thing anymore. It's very much a 50s thing. This was pre-internet, pre-Twitter. But he, I think, along with Arnold Palmer, and there's a bunch of this in the book. He and Palmer are very good friends. They become tight. He and Palmer sort of, through golf, sort of teach America what leisure time is for. So if you think about it, we've come out of the war, we've won, the suburbs are suddenly a thing, people have a little extra time, they have a little extra money. No one knows what to do with that time and money. Eisenhower sort of points the way and says, I do this thing. And he did it a lot, to be honest. And by the way, I don't think Eisenhower played golf because he wanted to like lead the country into a new suburban world. I think he played golf because he liked playing golf.
Yeah.
but I think the residual effect was people looked and saw this military hero, the president, he was out doing this. He was active. He was out in nature, and golf has a boom there. So I think he's really important both to the history of golf, and but also to the history of sort of the country becoming the country that we now know, where it's city and suburbs and exurbs. The other one is Trump. I mean, I just don't think you can talk about golf without talking about Trump. I think it's facile to be like, oh, he just cheats all the time. Like the truth of the matter is that Donald Trump is a very good golfer. Like anyone who has played with him will tell you, particularly for his age, I think he's 76 or 77 now, but particularly for his age, he's quite good. Now, is he as good as he says he is? No. He is not a scratch. Mm-hmm. He's not like a one. I think he's probably like a 6 to 8, which again, if I could shoot 78 to 80, I would be like thrilled. You know what I mean? And I'm 30 years younger than him. but his golf experience is different. So he's not a member at Medalist or Augusta or, you know, any of these really ritzy old money clubs. They will not have him. It's why he starts Trump International Golf Clubs, because he isn't invited to be a member at these places that he covets, like Augusta. You know, think of Donald Trump at Augusta. Like, could you think of a worse fit? Like, just in terms of Augusta's vibe versus Donald Trump's vibe, right? And so part of the reason he gets into these golf courses, which, by the way, now have become an essential piece of his real estate empire, is because he's not allowed to be a member at clubs he wants to be a member at. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a lot there on golf. I mean, a ton. But I think those, for me, those are the two most interesting as it relates to golf, their psyche, and sort of what it means for the country.
I know we got just a few minutes left with Chris Eliza here, and thank you so much for being a guest.
Oh my gosh, I'm happy to do it.
The sort of the flip side to Trump, who cheats some and but is good, was LBJ, who cheated all the time and was terrible.
Terrible.
And with LBJ, I don't even know that you could call it cheating, because I don't think he tried to hide what he was doing. he would just kind of keep hitting till he found a shot he liked.
That's exactly it.
There's a great story about LBJ, not related to sports, that I've mentioned this a few times in the podcast, but I've taught a class on the Senate in the past, and how Johnson was a certain way from basically as young as you know, yes, he could remember. And there's a story about how they a classmate was out at recess crying that somebody had eaten his piece of pie, and Johnson's cousin goes into the classroom and sees Johnson with pie all over his face, probably 4 years old, and the cousin just asks him, why did you do this? And LBJ just looks at him and goes, I wanted a piece of pie. And so that's sort of like the LBJ, and that philosophy kind of carries over to golf. It's like, well, why do you just keep hitting? Well, because I haven't found a shot that I like yet. So
it reminds me of that Simpsons episode where Bart becomes like, he becomes like the cipher for this like self-help guru. He's like, be like the boy, yep. Be like the boy. It's exactly the same. Like, I do what I want.
Yep. Exactly. Yes.
That is LBJ to a T. I didn't mean T that way, but yes, that is who he is. I think he's utterly uncaring of the rules of golf, right? And utterly uncaring of sort of the etiquette piece of it, the sort of unstated rules. Like, he kind of does what he wants when he wants to do it. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the reasons he never really played organized sports. He was not great at following the rules, particularly if he thought the rules disadvantaged him in some way, shape, or form. There's great stories. It's from Robert Caro's books, mm-hmm. that I used in mine,
yeah,
where like they're out playing and he is like all the, he's like eight or something, and everyone's out playing, and like he's like over talking to the men at the corner about politics. Do you know what I mean? Like he's just a strange. He's always was who he was. Mm-hmm. He was an odd kid in that he was not interested in sports. He showed no interest in playing or watching or spectating or being interested in them in any way, shape, or form, and was always obsessed from a young age with politics.
And power.
Yep.
So,
and by the way, just one other quick LBJ thing, the power thing reminds me of. So when LBJ comes to Washington, he realizes he has to make friends with Richard Russell, who is the Senate Majority Leader guy from Georgia, a bachelor. Russell loves baseball. Russell is like Nixon. He's like obsessed with baseball and the stats. LBJ couldn't give a crap about baseball, about any sport, but about baseball. But he realizes his way in with Russell is to feign interest in baseball, go with Russell to the baseball games because Russell's got no one to go with, and Russell doesn't like going by himself because he's the Senate Majority Leader. Like, it's a little weird to just like go and sit at the Nationals Senators game by yourself. So LBJ goes with him, fakes that he's interested in it, and that's one way that they build the relationship. But that's the way that LBJ saw sports and basically everything, which is like purely transactional.
Absolutely. I know we only have a couple minutes left here. Andrew, did you have anything before we closed out?
No, I did think it was kind of interesting. You mentioned with LBJ, with Russell, and then, you know, Nixon with the Redskins. At some point, there was a switch between the presidents and other high profile politicians rooting for the DC teams to changing to being very open about rooting for the teams
rooting for their home team. Yes.
And I feel like that says something, you know, that about, you know, and it probably the fact that they all go home every weekend, except the president, obviously there's something in there where they more see DC now as just a place to conduct their
That's it. I totally agree. I think that's
a thing. As opposed to where they live.
Yeah. I think that's totally a thing. I think, one thing that I didn't touch on that I do think is interesting is like Nixon and Ted Williams are like very tight.
Mm-hmm.
Williams is like a noted conservative. You know, like if you talk to conservatives about conservative athletes, they always cite Ted Williams. He loved Nixon and hated JFK, which always bothered JFK because obviously, like, Ted Williams is so associated with the Red Sox. When JFK always wanted his endorsement, and Ted Williams would never even meet with JFK. He'd just be like, tell him I'm a Nixon man. But 61 is like the best year for both Williams is managing the Senators and wins manager of the year. And Nixon has like a very good first year in office. It all basically goes downhill for both of them after that. But yeah, I do think that there was a sense that, you know, you're from here now. This is where you root. Mm-hmm. This is where you live. And now it's like very much out of style to root for any Washington team because it shows you've gone Washington in some way that I guess is pejorative.
Mm-hmm. And just to put an exclamation point, that same year of 69, when Williams comes to manage the Senators, that's also the one and only year that Vince Lombardi is the coach of the Redskins. So just a little.
That's right.
Little extra.
What a crazy year. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if you go back and look, like 69 was Ted Williams' best year, certainly as a manager ever. And it's probably Nixon's best year as a president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they both sort of lived it up. You know, Nixon would go to games and you know, root Williams on and write Williams notes. And again, like getting back to sort of where we started, Richard Nixon as like fanboy extraordinaire.
So we could not recommend the book more highly, and including one thing we didn't get to, which is that the fact that Jim Nance once played in a golf foursome with two presidents in George Bush 41 and Bill Clinton. And the fourth member of that foursome was somebody that, if you're a listener to this podcast or just a citizen of planet Earth, you might have heard of, which is a quarterback by the name of Tom Brady.
TB12.
Exactly. Chris Eliza, thank you so much. The book is called Power Players, Sports, Politics, and the American Presidency. And thank you so much for joining us for some time here today to talk about it.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for you guys doing what you do.
Thank you very much.
Glad to do it. Take care.
Be well. All right.
Take care. All right. Well, that was fun.
Yeah. And the book, it'd be hard to come up with a more tailor-made book for us specifically and probably for our audience. Maybe there'll be a prequel where we can talk about, you know, if James Madison could hit the curveball.
All right. Well, this was fun. And we will look forward to having you all join us again down the road. But until then, I'm Dan Newman.
And I'm Andrew Newman. Goodbye, old sports.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Join George Bozica, the president of the PFRA, and myself, John Bozica, each month for the Professional Football Researchers Association official podcast. We'll discuss the history of the game, the many names of the game, and so many different things for you, making the history of football not only entertaining, but fun at the same time, as we join you on the Sports History Network on the official PFRA podcast.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.